Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says they take you away and throw away the key. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And I want to ask you guys a question.
Okay,
yes,
Joe.
Yes, I'll go to the prom with you.
Aww. You guys are so sweet.
You know, well.
It wasn't the prom, it was the enchantment under the sea.
Oh, that's, thank goodness, because it's 2015. You know what year that is. It's Back to the Future 2. Anyway, what's your actual question?
No. I may have made this comparison before, but I've got to make it again. Do you remember all the internet paranoia in the 90s?
Oh, it was so good, yeah.
Yeah, and so thinking back on it now, it's often very funny. Because we were all thinking back then, oh no, what if evil techno criminals use the net to do horrible things? And it's funny how some of the fears we had back then turned out to be hilariously wrong and overblown.
Sure.
You know, like Sandra Bullock gets caught in the net.
Yeah, it turns out she was perfectly fine. She got caught in a net, but it wasn't the net.
But then some of it represented threats that we actually do have to deal with now that we're in this internet ubiquitous future. Identity theft, privacy compromises. I mean, these were things people were worried about back in the 90s, and they turned out to become reality.
Sure, yeah. Not everything depicted in those films was completely off base, although it was almost always, you know, because it is film.
Imagined in a hilarious way.
Overly dramatized,
sure.
You might say.
And yeah. Certainly the user operating systems were like nothing that we've ever seen.
Unix. I know this.
And I think we're sort of living in a similar era for 3D printing.
Sure.
We don't know yet what we're worrying about too much and what we're not worrying about enough.
Sure. Well, especially for people who have had very limited experience with 3D printers. They've heard about them but never had direct experience. Joe, as someone who has had direct experience with 3D printers, would you say that the 3D printer we have here in the office would be capable of printing anything that someone should be worried about remotely?
Are you worried about tangled masses of plastic hair?
Yeah, see, here's the thing.
Sometimes. Sounds like the plot of a Japanese horror movie, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If it's in front of the person's face.
Yeah, it becomes possessed.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Sure.
So we have printed stuff out with a 3D printer here at the office. It's just, it takes a lot of paying attention. Like, you can't just hit the print and walk away, because the materials themselves, in our case, I think we're using PLA plastic, but the materials themselves are, they need a certain temperature to operate at. And beyond that, you're either not going to get the meltedness you need for extrusion, or it's going to be too warm. And then the stability of the build will be compromised.
Or the build plate isn't leveled, or you haven't aligned everything correctly in your pre-planning phase.
Right.
And it's trying to print at a level below where the plate is or something.
Or your design has a key element missing, some kind of structural bit to it that just isn't quite there.
Right. I recently had a mask 3D printed for a costume. And in that case, the mask was divided into three pieces, because if we had tried to print it as one full piece, it would have been a miracle if it had come through with the structural integrity intact and not folded in on itself. The point being that 3D printing, at least on the consumer level, has come a long way, but it's still fairly primitive, and it's not like you can hit print and you get a gorgeous coffee mug. At the end of it, you're going to get something that's made out of plastic. Depending upon the sophistication of your printer, it may be obvious edges, especially like just between the layers of the plastic that's been laid
down. Plastic pixelation. Almost.
Yeah. It's not like a smooth surface like you would get from something that was molded plastic.
Well, certainly to a certain degree, you're right. But also, I mean, if you're willing to shell out a lot of money, there are some really good printers out there these days.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. And in labs, in research labs, there are extremely good printers that can print with metals and with glass even.
Yeah, it's a little bit beyond even the prosumer level, obviously. But the point being that some of the fears around 3D printers might be a little premature.
Right,
but
there are all kinds of fears people have because, I mean, obviously it's not exactly analogous to the internet because the internet was a more ubiquitous kind of information technology, you know, anything that people could do to you socially in general life that didn't involve physical contact, they could do over the internet.
Right. Sure, but there are fears that some of which are vaguely valid in the like especially for the future about 3D printers. It's not all the like, oh no, cats and dogs 3D printing together. Copyright infringement, I suppose, is a fair fear.
Sort of it's almost difficult to even call it copyright. It's certainly intellectual property. The idea of let's say that you own a furniture store. Someone comes in, takes pictures of a table that you have designed, and then goes and uses additive manufacturing, a 3D printing process, to essentially replicate that table. They're stealing your work. Mm-hmm. At least you could argue that.
And this is my plastic table now.
Yeah. Or especially with art or something like if you really wanted a sculpture and you had an extremely good 3D printer, then you know that sucks for the artist.
Yep.
I thought it was funny back when everybody freaked out that somebody 3D printed a gun because I was like, you can buy guns
a lot more easily than you could 3D print one.
Well, let's say you've got a criminal record, but you also have a large bank account.
Ah, okay.
You buy a 3D printer and you can print as many guns as you want, but you can go into any, you know, a legitimate establishment and have difficulty buying guns. Now, granted, if you have a criminal background, you probably also, I mean, assuming it's a
violent
criminal
and a large amount of
background,
money, you probably can illegally obtain a gun with, you know, a good $10,000 to $20,000 anyway.
Right. But it's still one of those things that, you know, you think, oh, well, this could suddenly put not only could it put guns in the hands of people, and that's kind of scary, you know, without any sort of
regulation,
checks. Right.
Yeah.
But also on the other side of it, beyond that scary thought is, if the person's not careful with the materials they're using to build their gun, you could end up with something that maims the person who built it. Even if they are just like, hey, look at this cool thing I built. I'm going to take it out to the shooting range and I'm going to shoot it there. I'm not planning on shooting anyone else. You're talking about using something that's, you know, if you're not using the right plastic, the forces of a bullet being fired could be enough to shatter that and severely hurt the person who's actually using the gun.
Oh, absolutely. The type of plastic that Cody Wilson used in that demonstration were far beyond the grade of the usual PLA that's found in most commercial level 3D printers.
Yeah, his gun was called the Liberator.
Jonathan and I did an entire episode in which we mostly contained our snark about Defense Distributed and Cody Wilson.
Yeah.
Back in 2013, May of 2013, it was called Printing a Gun. That was over on Tech Stuff. So if you somehow missed that story, you've been living under a rock for a couple of years, and or you'd like to go back and hear some details about it, go ahead and check that out. It is on the interwebs.
Yeah. But
like all of your security information.
Speaking of security.
Okay, yes.
That segues us into a story about...
I made a segue.
Yeah. It ends up getting us to a story about how 3D printing could cause a threat to one element of security. In fact, has. It's not could. It's happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there.
It's going on right now.
We're all doomed.
Yeah.
And it's your keys.
It's your keys. Specifically.
Well, it's your luggage.
Keys. It could be any key, but specifically we're going to start talking about the TSA-approved locks that you would use on your luggage.
Yeah, so I'm going to tell a little story. On November 24th, 2014, the Washington Post ran a story by Ashley Halsey III titled, "The Secret Life of Baggage, Where Does Your Luggage Go at the Airport?"
sounds like one of the movies they would watch on Best of the Worst on Red Letter Media.
It's so magical. Like your luggage has a little magic gnome kingdom.
And you know it would have that plinky music, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, as you watch it go through. Anyway, I'm sorry. You were saying.
No. So it was an article looking into U.S. Transportation Security Administration, so that's the TSA, you're probably familiar with it, screening practices for checked bags. And it was telling the story of what happens to your stuff after you check it. And I thought it was a pretty interesting article, actually. It talked about the machinery and the procedures used to screen traveling containers. Mm-hmm. And the key part of the story that's relevant to this topic is that the author talks about how the TSA has a set of master keys that can open all TSA-approved locks on luggage.
Which makes sense if your job is to be certain that stuff going through the airport and going onto airplanes doesn't contain dangerous materials.
Right. The TSA started saying, well, we need to screen this luggage for important security purposes, but if people are putting locks on their luggage, then we might have to cut their locks off, which is, you know, a waste of that person's resources. So please buy these TSA-approved locks that the TSA has master keys for, and then we can rifle through your personal belongings without destroying any of them on purpose.
And you'll never know because the lock will be back on them again.
Oh, no, they leave a little notice in there.
They leave a card.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
well, people are people.
If you want to lock your luggage to keep people out of it,
right,
but you don't use a TSA-approved lock and the TSA agent wants to check what's inside your bag, they'll just use bolt cutters.
Right. Yeah.
Which I guess is at least a little better than, you know, damaging your bag directly to get at what's inside of it.
Right, knife in the side of the bag.
Right.
Yeah.
Just barely better than that.
So the problem is that somebody published a version of this story that contained a very problematic picture. And I word it that way because I honestly can't tell if the image that I'm going to talk about originally ran with the story when it was published on the Washington Post page, or if it only appeared in a reprinting of the story on a site called Herald.net, which some sources refer to. The Washington Post version of the story does not have the offending image anymore, if it ever did.
Gotcha. But that offending image would be a picture of a hand holding a series of the master keys for the various types of TSA locks.
Yeah, it's a close-up image of all of the master keys that can get into all your bags.
So, in other words, if you take a look at this, you can see the shapes of each of those keys.
Whoops.
Which, you know, all right, back in the day, it would have taken quite a lot of work to create a key to, you know, use like a piece of metal and then grind it down just right based upon the way it looks in a picture.
But that could have been done, and we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Well, certainly before computer-run key creating machines. What are they called? Words are apparently not in my head today. This is terrific.
And also before algorithms that can end up looking at a pattern and making a really close estimation of what that pattern represents, right?
Yes.
Because the resolution on these images is not so high that you could just zoom. You couldn't zoom and enhance over and over so you got a good picture. You need a computer that has some good guesswork with it too. But now we're in the era, the combined era of sophisticated object recognition image software and additive manufacturing, that is 3D printing. Joe, please tell me that it is impossible for someone to take the images that are here in front of us and turn that into an actual physical thing, thus manufacturing their own master keys for TSA locks?
Well, I don't know about this image, but it's definitely possible to do from a photo. And it has been done, and people have tried the keys and they work. So I'm going to tell the story of that now. Apparently, somebody tried to delete this photo after they had published it, but
silly person, nothing gets deleted
right
off the internet.
What's the rule about the internet?
The internet is forever.
Yeah. Archive.org, we salute you.
And so on August 21st, 2015, now remember that original article was last year.
Yeah.
So it was out for a while. I don't know when the image got deleted. So I don't know exactly who was the first person to point out this problem, but several sources linked to an August 21st, 2015 tweet by a guy who calls himself an independent journalist named Luke Rudkowski.
Mm-hmm.
And it shared the image of the master keys and said, "Does at Washington Post and brilliant TSA know they just compromised their locking system by putting this out?"
So, ouch.
Yeah, some hackers got to work. So I'm going to try to explain what happened as far as as best I can understand it, because there was a kind of complicated series of events. But in early September, a group of lockpickers and security hobbyists published to GitHub a collection of CAD files based on the images of the TSA master keys that had become available on the internet. And it looks like it probably wasn't just the Washington Post image, and I'll say more about that in a minute.
But yeah, let's break down, let's unpack a couple terms for those of you who might not be familiar with GitHub and CAD images.
Sure. So GitHub is essentially a repository. It's a place where you put open source code, typically. So let's say that you create a program and you want to make it open source so other people can take your code, tweak it, change it, upload their own versions, you know, do transformative work with it. GitHub is sort of the centralized place that you would go and store that so other people could get at the code you had created.
Right. So if you want to make something like Google Deep Dream available to the public, you can put it up on GitHub so people can make their own apps to do things with it.
Right. Yeah.
But then also there are CAD files. The CAD just stands for computer aided design. So if you want to put together a digital shape to make on your 3D printer in three dimensions, you'll probably make it in a CAD program. You can think of a CAD program as a kind of MS Paint for 3D objects.
Yeah, I remember I had a friend who did a lot of work with CAD programs back in high school, but that was specifically in design classes, mm-hmm. where you're trying to create a three-dimensional object, a plan for a three-dimensional object. It's also used a lot in architecture firms, that kind of thing.
Right. So CAD is bigger than just 3D printing,
sure.
but it's a way to get the file you want to print in a 3D printer.
Yes.
So apparently after these files went up on GitHub, it was literally only a few hours before somebody downloaded them and printed one of these things, and it worked. There are now images online of people using these 3D printed keys based on these images to pop open their TSA approved luggage locks.
Yeah. And, to be fair, some of these TSA locks feel like they could open if you sneezed on them. But maybe that's just my experience with TSA luggage locks.
I've never used one.
Yeah, I don't really know.
I travel just enough where I've used them a few times. And I often question why I go through the trouble, but I still do it.
Yeah. Well, some users report being able to open the locks with unmodified prints of the keys using plain old PLA. So these are plastic keys. You don't need to print them in metal or anything.
And PLA is not the sturdiest plastic either.
No. I've got some little PLA trinkets on my desk that I made in our printer in the office.
Mm-hmm.
I read about one user in this Wired article that I'm currently referring to who had to modify the scale of the key, but otherwise it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And this Wired article talked to a lockpicker and University of Pennsylvania comp sci professor named Matt Blaze about it. And he made some interesting points, I thought. First of all, he pointed out that not that it really changes the thrust of the story, but just for the record, he thinks the image in question leaked somewhere before the Washington Post story, so they might not necessarily deserve all the blame.
Right, they might not be at fault.
Don't line up with your pitchforks. Only there.
Yeah.
He also says that a good lockpicker, you know, could probably pick the locks in less time and with less trouble than it would take to print the keys, since he says, and I quote, "I find it's actually quicker to pick the TSA locks than to look for my key sometimes."
Yeah. No, these are not terribly sophisticated locks. They're not meant to be. They're just meant to be a deterrent.
Sure.
And the other point he makes is that the parties in question should have known better than allowing people to photograph the keys, because photo security and physical keys is a known issue, and we'll get to more about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been more developments since then. According to a timeline that I read, which was created by a lockpicker involved with the TSA keys story, which I found linked in another article for The Intercept by Jenna McLaughlin.
Boy, the trail of sites here is impressive.
Well, I'm just trying to lead you through my thoughts. But anyway, the printed keys were actually based on additional imagery dug up by the hackers.
Oh, right, so it
wasn't just the Washington Post image that leaked, but it was sort of inspired by the Washington Post leak that hackers said, "I wonder if we can find any more images of these keys." And they went out and looked for them, and they did. They found, whether by legitimate or illegitimate means, I'm not sure, photos contained in a document called Guide to Travel Sentry Pass Keys, which was created by a group called Travel Sentry, which they have a kind of complicated relationship with the TSA and the lockmakers. They are not lock manufacturers, and they are not the TSA, but I understand that there's some sort of liaison organization.
Like a third party, kind of, that...
Yeah, they according to this article, they generate and enforce security guidelines for TSA-approved locks, whatever that means.
Huh.
Okay, so in the face of this mishap, the TSA responded.
Yeah, and this is one of the most troubling parts. That piece in The Intercept I talked about got a TSA official to talk about the leak and the 3D printed master keys. And I just thought I'd read a select quote. This was pretty interesting.
Okay, sure.
The TSA spokesperson, Mike England, said in an email to The Intercept, "The reported ability to create keys for TSA-approved suitcase locks from a digital image does not create a threat to aviation security. These consumer products are peace-of-mind devices, not part of TSA's aviation security regime." And also, the same guy said, "Carried in check bags are subject to the TSA's electronic screening and manual inspection. In addition, the reported availability of keys to unauthorized persons causes no loss of physical security to bags while they are under TSA control. In fact, the vast majority of bags are not locked when checked in prior to flight."
So what they're saying is that, well, we're concerned with national security, not your luggage's security.
Yeah.
So it's not really... our problem.
Yeah.
Not our problem.
No, it's, yeah, essentially.
And
saying,
these locks don't matter.
The TSA's purpose is not to make certain that the bag you packed has the same stuff in it when you get to where you're going as when you left in the first place.
It's just to make sure that you're not going to hurt the airplane or anybody on it, which I should put in is a valid thing to want.
Yeah. This Though, perhaps was maybe not the best way to communicate it. Since it seems like it's by this way, I mean, this quote almost seems like they are flipping me the bird and saying, don't yeah. worry, your stuff doesn't matter. Like they might as well say, don't put a lock on it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
because here they're saying, well, you know, it's going to be within our care the whole time. I mean, no one else is going to have access to it. And I'm thinking the people that are handling the luggage all along the pathway from the point where I hand it off to the point where I pick it up aren't all necessarily upstanding citizens. I say that because I know there have been incidents where people have found stuff missing from their bags.
I mean, there's also just the mere fact that if you are distrustful of human people and you perhaps don't make it to the baggage carousel exactly at the moment when your suitcase comes out, then, you know, a dishonest human person could walk up and just kind of rummage through your stuff and take some of it out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, especially if it's one of those things where you ended up getting bumped on a flight, you're delayed, but your luggage got on the flight that you were supposed to be on, and then it's going to be waiting for you for hours at an airport. You know, there are a lot of reasons why this to me is not exactly comforting.
Yeah.
So perhaps not the most PC response from the TSA. However, this does speak to a larger issue with 3D printing and security.
Yeah, because this thing that just happened, this TSA keys event, was not a totally unique situation. I mean, there are other ways that photo analysis or 3D printing and things like that can affect physical security. I mean, there are these ideas of 3D printed bump keys. I think you looked into this, Jonathan.
Yeah, bump keys are they're interesting. So the really weird thing about bump keys is you don't need a picture of the key to create a bump key. You need a picture of the lock. You mm-hmm. need to see how the lock is shaped. From there, you can create sort of a generic key that has sort of generic little peaks and troughs in it. So they don't have to match the way the actual key fits. It just has to be low enough so it can slide into the depth of the lock.
Mm-hmm.
All right? They're called bump keys because you put the key in the lock and you hammer it with a mallet, which jolts the key into the lock, pushing the pins. The pins are what keep the lock from being able to turn. Pushes the pins up. It's like you just gave it a quick shove. So the pins bounce up, and at that moment, you have to turn the key. And as you start turning the key, it's as if you're using the actual key built for that lock, and it will unlock the the lock in question. So you would 3D print this kind of generic key and then just use that hammer to go a quick bump and then a turn. And apparently it takes a little practice, takes some
finesse.
Yeah, some finesse to get the timing just right. But it works. You can totally make keys that will unlock locks this way.
Yeah, and of course, there's just plain old lock picking.
Sure. Yeah, which requires a little bit more practice and access to lock picking tools, which are not hard to get. But the practice takes time. Like it's
a learned skill.
Yeah, it's not as simple as you might think, but it's not, you know, impossible to learn. There are plenty of lock picking groups out there, hobby groups that this stuff all the time.
Hopefully airport security people should be able to look at someone and determine that they're sitting there trying to pick a lock
or
sticking a lock pick gun into a lock.
Or they see a person just like, I would like kneel down in front of a piece of luggage and then unfold my lock picks in front of me and then go,
I'm picturing you like sitting on a skateboard and like rolling along next to the baggage carousel.
Yeah.
With your little kit laid out on your knees.
Yeah.
Yes, that would be a little bit obvious. But also way before 3D printing, this was an issue too.
Yeah, I mean, people have been talking about various ways to reproduce keys from photos for years, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, for example, at the ACM conference on computer and communication security way back in 2008, there were a trio of security experts who presented a product they called Sneaky.
Key with the K.
Yeah, Sneaky. Yeah. Why? Because we love you. A system for duplicating a key that's not in your possession. So specifically by taking a picture of a key, being able to create a copy of it. Here's a quote from the abstract of their presentation. The access control provided by a physical lock is based on the assumption that the information content of the corresponding key is private, that duplication should require either possession of the key or a priori knowledge of how it was cut. However, the ever-increasing capabilities and prevalence of digital imaging technologies present a fundamental challenge to this privacy assumption. Using modest imaging equipment and standard computer vision algorithms, we demonstrate the effectiveness of physical key teleduplication, extracting a key's complete and precise bidding code at a distance via optical decoding and then cutting precise duplicates. We describe our prototype system, Sneaky, and evaluate its effectiveness in both laboratory and real-world settings using the most popular residential key types in the United States.
Which is basically saying that if anyone has ever taken a photograph of a key that you have, there's the potential out there, even without 3D printers, to produce a copy of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So all you kids who wear your keys on your hips.
Yeah.
Start putting those in pockets. You can keep the chain on them, but just put them in a pocket.
Deep in those JNCO pockets.
Yeah. So.
Hey, I like my JNCOs.
So one of the other things that you wanted to talk about, Joe, was how this goes beyond the TSA. It goes beyond even physical locks and keys, actually.
Oh, sure. I mean, and of course it applies to physical locks and keys, but it's a broader security question because in response to this incident, I've seen many writers and security analysts pointing out how this is essentially a problem that's inherent with backdoor systems.
Yeah.
We often think of backdoors in terms of software exploits, but the master key is a physical form of a security backdoor.
Right.
So what's the idea of a backdoor? It's essentially that there is a secret way around known only to supposedly legitimate authorities that can always get in through your security measures.
Yeah, I was on an episode of Daily Tech News Show where we were talking about backdoors. We were specifically talking about the NSA and backdoors, various law enforcement agencies often lobby to have backdoors inserted into popular types of software. The argument being that this would increase safety if they were able to get access to these things quickly and stop actors who would be who are trying to plan out something that's going to be harmful to others, often in the form of terrorist plans, that kind of thing.
Sure. So the ability to kind of peek in on telephone communications, for example.
Along those lines, exactly. And the point I made, and it's something I still believe in today, is that you do not increase security by introducing vulnerabilities into your system. And a backdoor is by its nature a vulnerability.
Yeah, and frankly, they don't care about increasing security. I mean, that's not the goal, is to increase your privacy or your personal security. It's about another goal, which is, even if you take the authorities who want backdoors and everything at their word and say they're not going to abuse their power, no matter what kind of system we're talking about, if there's a third party with a key that always works, there are ways that third party's key can slip into the hands of the bad actors.
Right.
So even if you totally trust the government, which, you know, we're not saying you should.
It's not the point of the show right now, one way or another.
But
right.
let's pretend you do totally trust the government and the authorities. It's still a bad idea to have these back doors because they always get out.
Yeah, that's exactly what my point was mm-hmm. the idea that a back door is by its nature a vulnerability. It's a way other than the preferred way to access a system. Doesn't matter if it's a door or if it's an operating system, or if it's a piece of software, or if it's a telephone, does not matter what it is. It is another way that an actor can gain access to a system and potentially cause quite a bit of damage in the process. So it is my belief that backdoors are nearly always a bad idea.
We all saw what kind of havoc they wreaked in Jurassic Park.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, you're talking about Nedry.
Yeah.
Nedry had a back door.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was for legitimate authorities, but that was for...
Well, no. I mean...
You didn't say the magic word related purposes.
Yeah. I'm extrapolating on the... You create back doors and suddenly dinosaurs can run amok.
That is a good part, because it wasn't necessarily part of Nedry's plan to have velociraptors eat everybody. It's just an unfortunate consequence.
Yeah. This brings us back to, this is Unix. I know this.
Yes. Right.
But anyway, I think it would be interesting to talk about some of the implications of this kind of event.
Yeah, so obviously we could reach the conclusion that physical locks and keys have had their day. We've already known that there were these potential vulnerabilities. We've talked about those. We've talked about lock picking, and we talked about the ability to replicate a key simply from a picture. But this new story about 3D printing, coupled with the rise of 3D printing in popular culture, kind of drives it home yet again that the physical lock and key is not a beat-all security measure, and that perhaps it's time to start looking at alternatives.
We need retina scanners on everything.
Biometrics are part of it, but also this is not the only type of story, embarrassing story, about a lock and a way of getting access to that lock. Did you guys ever hear about, there was a story that broke around 2005 about the kryptonite bike locks?
Oh, yeah.
So I got a buddy, his name's Brian Brushwood, and he's a magician and a scam artist. That's what he calls himself. And so he did an episode of Scam School recently where he actually showed this particular vulnerability in action. So back in 2005, kryptonite released a bike lock that had a tubular lock to it. So it uses a cylindrical key to activate the pins, and then you turn that and it releases the lock.
And it's sort of like a like whistle shaped almost.
Yeah. And so he showed that something that people had known for quite some time, that particular style of lock could be defeated with a Bic pen casing. You take the pin out of the pen and then
you use the ink part, plastic part.
Yeah, you just wiggle that onto the lock, and if you wiggle it the right way, you can activate the lock, and you've opened up a kryptonite. These are expensive locks, by the way. Kryptonite bike lock, thus getting access to not just the bike lock, but also the bike that was locked to it. And so there were some people who were criticizing Brian because they were saying, hey,
Why would you show this?
Yeah, don't show people how to steal bikes. And I actually commented on his YouTube video and said, guys, he's not showing you how to pick locks. This is information that's been out there since 2005. What he's showing you is which lock you absolutely should not be using for your bicycle.
Oh, right. This is important consumer information.
Right.
Yeah, it's the white hat hacker principle.
Exactly.
Somebody shows you the vulnerabilities in your security. Hopefully that should spur you to create better security.
And Kryptonite did do that. In full disclosure, Kryptonite went back, they redesigned their lock. They went with a disc shape rather than a tube shape, and they offered an exchange program. So they did their due diligence.
Once
the vulnerability was known, it wasn't like they washed their hands and backed away. This is their business.
Suckers.
Yeah.
No.
So they went, they did well, and held up their end of the bargain.
And some other systems have certainly been created that are trying to move away from physical keys. You know, the little beepers on cars that will open your car door, or having a numerical keypad on your house for
right,
a lock.
Right. A lot of them are things that are proximity based. Like if you have a smartphone that has a particular app on it,
mm-hmm.
You may have to put in a PIN in order to activate a lock and unlock something as you're walking up to your front door. I've seen some systems that are so proximity-based that you don't even have to do that. If you have your phone on, you've paired it with the lock system, and you get within range, it'll automatically unlock. I don't know that I'm particularly in favor of that approach, but I do like the idea of using the PIN system. It's not foolproof. No security system is ever foolproof, but it's an alternative to the physical key and lock. Now, a lot of these systems also have a physical key that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's not a double lock system, in other words, if the same like physical lock and the digital lock are the same, you might not be in any better shape, considering that we've already talked about the vulnerabilities of physical locks.
Yeah, and there's also vulnerabilities involved in biometric systems, too. We've talked about that either here or on Tech Stuff before.
Yeah,
I can't
we talked
remember.
About it on Forward Thinking. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Because it's at this current moment not all that difficult to fool a retina scanner or a thumbprint scanner.
Right. Yeah, there are certain ones that are looking more promising, like the ones that trace the veins underneath the skin.
And check for blood flowing.
Yeah, making sure that someone hasn't just cut off your hand and used it to slap on your front door. In which case, you may not be worried so much about the burglary. There might be other things that are pressing issues on your mind.
Like bleeding.
Yeah, that could be way up there. But yeah, this is one of the things we don't say this in order to cause fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but rather to raise awareness of security vulnerabilities. Maybe it's one of those things that just makes you think before you get a picture taken, like, oh, you know, I probably shouldn't have my keys out, or, you know, anything along those lines where you want to practice good security measures. Not necessarily to go out and like buy the latest security system to outfit your house. I mean, I just use a cave troll is what I've got right behind the front door. Very effective,
don't talk about your puppy like that.
He's a monster.
Now, what if somebody, the person who bred those cave trolls, actually all taught them all a secret password that only the company has? Until they leak internal documents, and now people know they can get past your troll by saying the magic word, which is Jarlsberg.
I was concerned with that, but it turns out that this particular cave troll only goes into a grapevine if you say that. So apparently there was musical theater at that particular cave troll university, so I'm thankful for that. To be more serious, however, obviously it's good to think about these things whenever you're concerned about your security. When it comes to TSA locks, I mean, I don't have any good advice for that at all right now. Like, I don't even know if I'll be using them at this point.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's...
Don't take anything valuable on a plane.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
The hard part is when you go someplace and you pick up stuff for people you love to bring back to give to them. Like if I go on a trip and I start buying souvenirs for people, then I have a concern about that. Although I could always ship it, I guess.
Stop having people that you love?
It's slowly turning out that way. I'm just getting grouchier as I get older.
No, I don't know. I mean, you know, perhaps good advice if you have a few extra bucks on you is to buy a regular lock. But since even those aren't foolproof...
I saw one commenter on one of the articles I read saying, I always use zip ties.
Interesting.
Huh.
is they're cheap, and if the TSA needs to get in there, they'll just cut it off.
Yeah. And then won't cause damage to the luggage. And that's probably the best approach, and thinking that, well, if they don't need to see it, everything's safe. And if they do need to see it, well, there's nothing I can do to stop them anyway, because that's their job. They're trying to practice security for a much larger group than just my stuff.
Right. They got to verify that my cans of dog food are not actually
something
bombs.
Else. Yeah. Yeah. Well, at any rate, this was an interesting topic to cover. We didn't get quite as angry as we all thought we would, which I guess is good.
I think I got about as angry as I was anticipating.
I think I got about three quarters as angry as I was anticipating.
Cool. Yeah. Hey, well, success.
Yeah. I had gelato.
I'm perfectly calm. Okay.
Calm, dude. I'm calm. All right. Well, I'm going to abide by that. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Forward Thinking, I recommend you write to us and tell us what those are. The email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or you can drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Google Plus. At Twitter and Google Plus, we are FW Thinking. Just search FW Thinking on Facebook. We'll pop right up. You can leave us a message on there, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.